Rolling right along here on Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM. Andy Bulbarch, Rocco Nucci with you. And it's time now for us to take our weekly trip back to Planet Golf as we bring in Guy Cipriano, the editor at Golf Course Industry Magazine. Guy, always a pleasure to have you on. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great, Bull. I hope you and all your listeners are doing well, and hopefully people are getting outside and enjoying this nice weather. As you can probably tell from some of the noise in the background, I'm outside here right now.
Well, it's beautiful out, and we certainly hope that that continues. The forecast looks pretty darn good and could be a great weekend for golf as well. Well, let's get in to the events of this past weekend. I'm really not sure that this could have worked out any better for the PGA Tour. The Charles Schwab Challenge was very, very highly anticipated on so many fronts, and it was very well viewed as well, as we saw the ratings come out not too long ago also. But recapping the action on the course, you know, a playoff to finish up, a highly anticipated tournament. I don't know that golf could have asked for anything better than the finish they got.
I completely agree, Bull. For starters, the most important thing is that nobody on site tested positive for COVID-19, and then there are more than 400 people that were tested, including every player and every caddy. So that's a huge victory right there before anyone even sticks a tee in the ground. And then from the competitive side, it was a compelling tournament. There were a lot of storylines. I mean, you had Harold Varner III in the lead early in the tournament and even into the weekend at some point, and he was very active about supporting a number of social causes. In fact, he was born in Northeast Ohio. He's an Akron native. He moved to North Carolina when he was 6 years old. And then you had a lot of other intriguing names up that leaderboard. I mean, Justin Rose was on there, major champion, Olympic gold medalist. Jordan Spieth. Remember him, Bull?
Of course.
Well, some people didn't, because it's been almost nearly 3 years since he won his last tournament. He's up on the leaderboard. Justin Thomas was up on it. And you had a number of other accomplished players. You had major champions like Justin Thomas, and then even when you got into the last day, Patrick Reed and Bubba Watson got on the leaderboard, and then just really solid players like Xander Schauffele and Colin Morikawa and Daniel Berger. And then Bryson DeChambeau created quite the buzz last week. Get this, Bryson DeChambeau gained 20 pounds during the 3 months off. He was leading the PGA Tour in driving distance even before the time off at 323.8 yards. And you know what his average drive was last week? 340.4 yards down in Fort Worth, Texas. So that created a lot of intrigue and buzz in golf, just seeing a bulked up Bryson bomb the ball. He finished one shot out of the playoff that was between Daniel Berger and Colin Morikawa. So really, to me, what's a great golf tournament? A great golf tournament is when the weather cooperates, and they didn't have any weather disruptions in Fort Worth, Texas. And when you go into the back nine on Sunday and have numerous different players who could win, and that was certainly the case. So you couple all that with no positive COVID-19 test among the players and caddies and other people on site, you have a hugely successful week to begin the restart of the PGA Tour.
It certainly was. And you mentioned Bryson DeChambeau, and I thought that was really interesting watching him. You talked about how he had put on some weight. Obviously, it was positive weight. And it was something I think that a lot of people followed from the beginning of the tournament, because there were pictures posted of him stating that he really kind of had the build of a middle linebacker. And it was fascinating, at least on Saturday, to talk about how he put on all of that weight. And that was really allowing him to generate more torque and get more distance on his drives as well. But with him, it's more than just about getting distance on his drives, and I think that's something that kind of gets overlooked.
Yeah, and he's certainly a unique character. You know, he came into pro golf with a lot of hype because he's one of only five people to win the NCAA championship and the U.S. amateur, so he was certainly no known entity 5 years ago when he turned professional. And get this, he weighs 40 pounds more now than he did when he turned professional in 2015. That's quite a jump, and boy, I wonder what he was doing over the three-month hiatus. Can you imagine just taking 3 weeks or 3 months and putting on 20 pounds of positive weight? I want to know what's in his diet and his workout regime. I think anybody that's looking to give themselves a physical edge in a sport might want to tap into Bryson's mind. And yeah, he's a player who is unique. He's a character. Sometimes he's controversial in the game of golf. Sometimes he's innovative. And believe me, if Bryson DeChambeau would have won at the Charles Schwab Challenge. I think there would have been a lot of players in the weight room that night trying to emulate what he does, and he's going to be a fascinating person to follow the rest of the season. Like I said, he finished one shot out of a playoff, and if he is bombing the ball 340 yards week after week and starts winning, boy, that could really change how the game is played even more.
Well, yeah, and they mentioned this on the broadcast on Saturday that apparently he was crushing protein shakes, and one of the things they mentioned was, look, in the heat, he better make sure that he's chasing those protein shakes with some water, because in that Texas heat, that could really wear you down quickly. But that was one of the more compelling aspects of what went down this weekend, seeing how these guys handled the elements. And yeah, things were a little bit different, but I thought the overall presentation was really fascinating. No fans. It did make a little bit of a difference, but I also thought it gave us a much better chance to hear the interaction with the players and the caddies as well. And that's kind of more of the inside information and the inside scoop that we don't normally get under the normal circumstances.
Yeah, and we're going to get more of that. I mean, Ricky Fowler, I believe, was the only player mic'd up during the Charles Schwab Challenge, but Adam Hadwin has agreed to be mic'd up this week at the RBC Heritage, and there are other players already coming out saying that they're going to do it. And, you know, we talk about how maybe Bryson bombing the ball and putting on that weight over 3 months could change how golf might be played in the future even more. Really, I think what we saw this past weekend was a change in how golf is presented to the viewer, too. Jim Nance was the only person up in the booth. Sir Nick Faldo was in the Golf Channel studios in Orlando. And, well, could you even really tell that Nick Faldo and some of the other commentators weren't there?
No, they masked that extraordinarily well.
Yep, and the on course was Dottie Pepper and Mark Immelman, and then the rest of the team, Ian Baker Fitch and Frank Nobilo, were in Orlando with Nick Faldo in the Golf Channel studios, and then I think Amanda Baliones was in San Diego. And that makes me really think people that run businesses and TV networks never want to be the first to try something different. And we've seen this now with three golf broadcasts over the last 5 weeks, is announcers scattered all over the place, some on course, some in a studio, and it really makes you think how games are going to be broadcast in the future. I mean, right, you're a press box guy. You've called thousands of baseball games, and there's something to being on site that you probably don't get in a studio, but if they're pulling this off with not everybody on site, just think of how much lower the production costs can be for some of these professional sports. So there were also some other innovative things. CBS had a low-flying drone that was capturing some images. There weren't quite as many camera people there, but I don't think anyone really noticed. That team did a tremendous job, and I suspect that we'll see more players mic'd up in the future. I think we'll see more announcing teams where maybe it's split between on-site and in a studio, and it's going to be curious to see how these events are process moving forward. And I will say that golf is probably the most difficult sport to broadcast. If you think about it, it's played over a 100-acre site, a site that's more than 100 acres. You have dozens upon dozens of cameras and announcers all over the place and a production truck. And it's not an easy sport to pull off on a normal week. And to do this with some of the restrictions that they were facing was pretty remarkable. And I don't think that golf could have asked for better job out of CBS in this first week back.
Well, and to your point, a very, very impressive rating number as well. This was the most watched Charles Schwab Challenge in 16 years. So that certainly says something about the overall production value. And I think it goes far beyond just being the first PGA Tour event in 3 months, because people sometimes tend to forget that there were a couple of other golf productions on television between now and then. But this was the first PGA Tour event in 3 months. Do you think that they did enough to carry some of that momentum into this week?
Yeah, they did. Even though there aren't a lot of sports going on right now, really much of anything, on Saturday and Sunday afternoons, you have to think about just the weather. It's been really nice in a lot of parts of the country, and it's been beautiful, and we can speak to that in Northeast Ohio. It's a tough sell to get people to watch sports on a weekend in the summer with the weather so nice. I know people are out doing things, so maybe you don't have the competition from other sports, and everybody's like, oh, people should just be flocking to these sports that are on. But we sometimes forget about all the competition from participatory activities, especially when the weather's nice. And over 2 million people watching a non-major golf event on a beautiful summer weekend across the country, that's an impressive number. And how could you not like what you saw from the competitive aspect? I mean, get this, you know, Daniel Berger and Colin Morikawa going to the playoff at 15 under, and then Bryson DeChambeau, Jason Kokrak, an Ohio native, Justin Rose, Xander Schauffele finished a shot out of that playoff, and then Patrick Reed and Bubba Watson were two shots out of that playoff. So, like I said, competitive intrigue as a viewer, what you want is numerous possibilities entering that back nine on Sunday, and golf had that. And if you were somebody who did not watch golf regularly, I think you'd be very impressed by the level of competition and the suspense that the tournament had at the closing moments.
Again, we're being joined on the hotline by Guy Cipriano, editor at Golf Course Industry Magazine. All right, Guy, we'll transition into this weekend. Boy, it should be really interesting to see just how impressive this field is expected to be. We'll get into the field here in just a moment. But before we talk about who's playing in the tournament, I want to get into the course for the RBC Heritage at Harbortown Golf Links in Hilton Head. What should we know about Harbortown Golf Links in Hilton Head, and how will that affect the field this week?
Harbortown's a great golf course. It really started the golf boom in that part of South Carolina. It was opened in 1969. Designed by Pete Dye with some help from Jack Nicklaus. Pete Dye, of course, passed away earlier this year. He's a legendary architect, maybe the greatest, up until the time of his death, he was the greatest living architect. You know, locally, he's known for doing Fowler's Mill on the east side of Cleveland and Avalon Lakes in the Warren Youngstown area. So he's got, you know, he was born in Ohio, down in Urbana. So he's got a lot of Ohio roots. But this is a fascinating golf course. This is a longtime PGA Tour stuff, just like Colonial Country Club. A lot of holes along water, the smallest greens on the PGA Tour. The greens are only 3,700 square feet, so it's really a target golf course. There are trees, but then there's some beautiful views of the marshes and wetlands and the sound there. And it'll be a bit of a different golf course because this tournament's usually played in April. In April, they're playing on greens that are overseeded with Poa trivialis and fairways that are overseeded with ryegrass. It'll be a Bermuda grass golf course. The overseeing has transitioned out, so it'll play a little bit different than it usually does in April. And the superintendent there, John Wright, is fabulous, and they have a lot of volunteers helping their crew on an annual basis. So it'll be a golf course that will just produce a great tournament. It's spectacular seating, especially that 18th hole with the lighthouse and the sound. And I'm really excited to watch it. It'll be interesting to see how the golf course plays in June compared to April. That's one where wind can really change things, and yeah, it's if you're a longtime golf fan, you've seen a lot of tournaments at Harbortown, and actually the field's as strong as a tournament at Harbortown's ever had, because this tournament's typically played the week after the Masters, so it's tough to get some of the big names. Well, all five of the world's top five are playing this week.
And that will give us a perfect segue into our next question, talking about the field, which, as you mentioned, is going to be extraordinarily impressive. And I'm anxious to see who you think is really going to stand out in this field. As it pertains to this particular course, last week you gave us the idea that, you know, at the Charles Schwab Challenge, it wasn't necessarily a course designed for big bombers. You mentioned this is more of a target golf course with, you know, very small greens on the hole. So as you examine this field, who really kind of stands out to you?
I would go with this is going to sound like last week, but an experienced player that really knows how to move the ball and shape shots and hit those tight greens and has a good short game and can really get up and down when they do miss greens. And, you know, there's some players that I really think are built for this course. Matt Kuchar's had success there in the past. Kevin Kisner is somebody that I thought highly of last week. He's from South Carolina. He's someone that I think can really move the ball around and score at Harbortown. Zach Johnson hasn't won for a few years. In fact, he hasn't won since winning the British Open in 2015. So he's somebody that I think can emerge this week. And I also, a name to really keep an eye on is Webb Simpson. Bull, did you know Webb Simpson is ranked ninth in the world right now?
Wow, I did not know that.
I don't think a lot of people realize that, but he's somebody that has played well at Harbortown the last 3 years. I was looking at this morning. He was tied for 16th in 2019, tied for 5th in 2018. Tied for 11th in 2017. He's not one of the longest hitters. I'll say this with a caveat. He's only averaging 300.1 yards per drive this year. That gets you 84th on the PGA Tour, but he won in Phoenix. Yeah, he missed the cut last week, but he's somebody that I would really keep an eye on this week. So I'm thinking it's going to be an experienced player that can move the ball and has a great short game.
All right, well, last week, We wrap things up without asking for a prediction, and you just talked about Webb Simpson, how you think he could certainly be a favorite in this. So, you know, because we're talking about a pretty big field here, we're not just going to ask you for one guy. So if you were to narrow it down to, say, three guys on Sunday, who do you think those final three will be that we should be watching for?
I would say Webb Simpson. We just mentioned him. Xander Schauffele, he was oh so close last week and kind of gave it away down the stretch. He's somebody that can play well on it every golf course. And who's coming into this in good form, as evidenced by that tie for third place finish last week. So those are two names that immediately jump out to me. And then I'll say Matt Kuchar. Matt Kuchar is a top 10 machine, and this could be the week where he really starts a string of where he's always up in the money and doing things to boost his world ranking. So, yeah, those are three names right there.
All right, well, one more thing I want to hit on here as we go back to last week, because I think this is a golf tournament that we are going to be talking about for quite some time in the Charles Schwab Challenge, simply because it was the first PGA Tour event in just over 90 days. There were a couple of shots that stood out to me, and I'm kind of interested to see what you thought about the best shots you saw in the entire tournament. I think it's awfully difficult to ignore day one, the ace from Sung Kang, a 9-iron, 165 from the pin, and he sank it. Now, it was a little bit of a different feeling because there were no fans there, so you didn't really get a lot of the same emotion you might get normally. And then on the final day, Rory McIlroy, fourth shot, out of the rough. He was also hitting from a slope, no less. And essentially, that saved par for him at a pretty crucial moment in the tournament. So those are my two favorite shots of the weekend. Were there any that really stood out to you?
The hole-in-one stood out to me, Bowen. It got me thinking the moment I saw that, the highlight of that was, what would Ben Hogan think? Ben Hogan owned Colonial Country Club. It's called Hogan's Alley for a reason. There's a statue of him up there. I mean, that's a place where he had a lot of success. And when I say he owned it, I don't mean like he actually owned the country club. I mean that he just won there a lot. And you knew Ben Hogan was going to be in contention every time they played Colonial Country Club. I just imagine what he would have been thinking seeing Sung Kang hit a hole-in-one at Colonial from 165 yards using just a 9-iron. It's certainly a different game, right, than people like Ben Hogan and Byron Nelson and Sam Snead play. So that's a shot that really stands out when you think about the history of the place and the club that the player used. And Sung Kang isn't even a big hitter, and he's, you know, throwing a dart from 165 with a 9-iron, just a 9-iron. I wish we could all do that. But, yeah, that's the shot that really stands out in my mind. And I also think the other image I'll have in my head is just the openings of the broadcast, right? Like, sports have not been on for a while, live sports, at least in a regular capacity. And just seeing Jim Nance do introductions on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in such unusual circumstances, that'll be something that I don't think I'll forget for a long time.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. And hopefully we will have many more moments like this to discuss from this weekend's festivities as well for the RBC Heritage at Harbortown Golf Links in Hilton Head. Guy, as always, a pleasure to catch up with you on Planet Golf, and we'll sit down and do this again next week as the golf tour, the PGA Tour golf schedule continues to roll right along. And in a couple of weeks here, we'll be talking about an event in Columbus that'll actually have fans too. Looking forward to that.
Yep, can't wait, Bull. Thanks for having me, and hopefully everybody enjoys this awesome weather.
Absolutely, Guy. Thank you very much. That's Guy Cipriano, editor at Golf Course Industry Magazine, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. We need to break. We'll do that now, and then we'll come back with more right after this. It's Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM.